FCC is just about to hold a vote on a piece of the mid-band spectrum that's called C-band, which could clear up more than 200 megahertz of spectrum that can be used for 5G.
Welcome to the Washing Tech Policy Podcast.
The latest tech law and policy news and brightest tech law and policy experts wherever you are.
So you can stay informed on the move in less time.
From Washington, D.C., it's the Washing Tech Policy Podcast.
With Joe Miller.
The DOJ has charged four Chinese military officials for the 2017 Equifax hack, but is your data any more safe than it was in 2017? Ancestry.com refused to honor almost all of the arrest warrants it received last year, and John Godfrey is my guest. The Department of Justice indicted four Chinese People's Liberation Army officials on Monday, charging them with nine counts for the 2017 Equifax hack that led to the theft and sale of some 145 million Americans' data. U.S. Attorney General William Barr noted that this represents nearly half of the American population. The indictment includes charges for stealing trade secrets. DNA platform Ancestry.com refused to honor valid arrest warrants in 8 out of 9 cases last year, according to the company's 2019 transparency report. Competitor 23andMe has also promised to keep its DNA database private. Ancestry.com's DNA database is estimated to contain the DNA information of some 16 million people. The U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York in Manhattan approved the $26.5 billion T-Mobile-Sprint merger last week over the objection of 15 attorneys general, including California AG Javier Becerra and New York AG Letitia James. Presiding Judge Victor Romero wrote that the merger is not likely to lessen competition, and the merged company is required to divest resources to satellite provider Dish to ensure Dish becomes a viable competitor. Finally, Amazon has removed two books written by white supremacists. Authors David Duke, who was a former KKK Grand Wizard, and George Lincoln Rockwell, the founder of the American Nazi Party. Some booksellers say that Amazon's policies are opaque and have vocalized opposition to the removal of hate speech. And you can find links to all of these stories in the show notes.
Tech policy is global policy. This is the Washing Tech Policy Podcast, serving the world.
My guest today is John Godfrey, Senior Vice President of Public Policy for Samsung Electronics America. Based in Washington, D.C., he leads Samsung's public policy team in engagement with government and industry, focusing on communications policy, digital television, wireless spectrum, healthcare, environment, broadband, cybersecurity, privacy, and other areas. An active participant in the Consumer Technology Association, CTA, Godfrey is a member and past chair of the CTA Foundation's Board of Trustees and CTA's Video Division Board, among other groups. Please welcome John Godfrey. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe.
Tell us a little bit about what you do at Samsung and what are the policy topics that you're most focused on right now?
I represent Samsung here in Washington, D.C. Been with Samsung for almost 14 years now, and there's a really wide range of policy issues, as you can imagine, that affect a global electronics company like Samsung. 5G is certainly top of mind for us, something that affects our mobile business and our network business and potentially everything we do. But we're also interested in trade policy, cybersecurity, privacy, environment and sustainability, whole range of things that the government touches on that affect Samsung and where we want to engage with the government, have a good cooperative working relationship with them.
So discussion around 5G often mentions words like innovation and disruption, buzz terms and industry jargon aside. Can you bring the applications and advantages of 5G acceleration down to earth for us?
I can sure try. You know, 5G is a catchy term because it's easy to understand. It's fifth generation. It's a whole generation beyond what came before, which was 4G. And before that was 3G. And these generational changes in the mobile wireless platform really come along only about every 10 years. And they represent a pretty significant leap forward. And that spells innovation because with the new platform that gets deployed, there's a whole lot more capabilities, a whole lot more power for innovators to build on top of and build and launch new applications and services. So I can tell you a little bit about what people think 5G will be for, but then I'll tell you what I think is a more realistic answer and maybe a better answer. But what people think 5G will be for is for very, very fast downloads, very fast wireless communications, not only to your smartphone or your tablet, but also to your car, to machines. Machine-to-machine communication is one of the applications for 5G. Maybe to networks of sensors deployed around smart cities or in retail stores, in factories, in smart agriculture. So think of networks of sensors and also very high-speed wireless networks. But that doesn't really get to exactly how it's going to affect people's lives and what people are going to do with it. And I like to think back about 10 years ago when 4G was coming along and people were trying to predict what it would be for. And some people were even a little bit skeptical. They said, you know, do you really need to open your email faster than you did before or download a song faster? They were still thinking about the things that they had been doing with mobile phones and 3G. Didn't realize 4G was going to open up entirely new kinds of services that nobody had even thought of yet. Things like ride sharing or things like social networking. I guess there was such a thing as social media before 4G, but it was something you had to do when you were sitting tethered to your desktop, your laptop computer. Social networking really caught on once it was something you could carry around with you on your smartphone and always be in connection with a wireless connection that was good enough in quality for video and real-time interaction. So 4G enabled these whole new industries to appear, these whole new services to appear that were invented on top of that platform. 5G is going to be like that. There are innovators out there today, and they may not even be the companies making the equipment like Samsung or the carriers that are operating the networks. It could be entirely new entrants, kids who are in their garage today, who are inventing a new service that's going to take advantage of the capabilities of 5G and launch something new on this platform. And so it's hard to predict exactly what it will be, but I think it will involve large amounts of data, very high speed wireless connection. That brings to mind maybe telepresence, real-time video, maybe remote operation of things. It could be remote operation of robots or remote sensing capabilities, really, really great video conferencing like what you and I are doing right now. But anywhere you go where you're within range of a 5G network. So I would think whole new companies, whole new applications are coming on top of 5G as soon as it's broadly deployed.
So we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll find out more about what 5G is going to mean for connectivity, access, and adoption. Stay with us. In its early stages, but I'm interested in your thoughts, John, on how the technology will influence things like future of connectivity and access and adoption, particularly in rural areas. What are your thoughts there?
Well, 5G is being rolled out now by all of the major U.S. carriers. There will probably be some new entrants that come in as well. And 5G is interesting because it's not one particular frequency band. And I don't want to get too technical, but in general, the really higher frequencies are the ones that have very, very fast data rates because there's a whole big, large amount of spectrum available there, very wide channels, but they don't propagate very far. So those really high frequencies are probably not the best ones for rural America. There will be some deployment in rural America, maybe some deployment in suburban areas, but it's kind of intended for high density areas, urban areas, along roadways, and in installations like, you know, factories or venues like a football stadium, things like that. That's where the really high frequencies are with the are going to be deployed with very high data rates. But 5G is not only about those high frequencies. It's also about mid-band and lower frequencies. And as you get to the low frequencies, it's kind of the opposite story. The signals propagate much farther, but they don't carry as much speed. So in rural America, 5G is already being deployed by some of the carriers today. It's not the very, very high speed, high data rate flavors of 5G, but it is still 5G. It's got a lot of enhancements over what was possible in 4G because the standards and technology have evolved. In particular, the machine-to-machine communications and also the what's called low latency, which means the network responds with very little lag when you send a command through it. And so those are important for things like, you know, agriculture or autonomous driving, remote, I'm not going to say robotic surgery. I'm not sure robots are going to be remotely operating on people. But I mentioned telepresence already. You can imagine a doctor coaching someone through surgery remotely, maybe emergency surgery or on call, because the quality of the video and the low lag time of the network makes that possible. So some of those types of applications, I think, may be possible in rural America. With the advantages of 5G that are being deployed today. And the mid-band is kind of a compromise between the low band with its great propagation and the high band with its great carrying capacity. The mid-band is kind of what's in between. And there will be some of that deployed in rural America as well.
And by propagation, you're referring to the way radio frequencies travel across the ground. So higher goes a shorter distance, lower goes a longer distance. And like you just said, the mid-level is sort of a hybrid between the two.
That's right. And one of the things that policymakers are really interested in, because their citizens are asking them about this, is how is this going to look in my neighborhood? Are there going to be these 200 foot tall cell towers? And the answer to that is for the low frequency parts of 5G, that is kind of like traditional cellular, where it may be another radio on a tall cell tower. But most of America is already covered by those large cell towers. So it may just be a new radio on one of those towers. But the high frequency flavors of 5G, the base stations, the antennas that you would see on a tower are much, much smaller. The frequencies are higher, the radio waves are smaller, so the antennas are smaller. And the base stations that Samsung makes for carriers are, for the millimeter wave high frequency 5G, are about the size of a child's backpack. So they definitely don't need to go up on a big tall tower. You might find them deployed on a light pole or on the corner of a building, much less obtrusive than what's been possible in the past. So that's something we're excited about for making 5G kind of comfortable for people to see deployed in their neighborhoods.
So there are a lot of moving parts here. You have the frequency allocation. In some cases, you know, spectrum has to be repackaged. And there are international issues here with staying competitive with other countries like China. What should the government be focusing on here? What can the government do to best accelerate the rollout of 5G?
The most important thing is spectrum. That's something that's in scarce supply everywhere. And it's really important for the government to figure out ways to allocate spectrum that can then be used by commercial operators to deploy new 5G services. whether it's licensed spectrum that where they buy licenses at an auction, or in some cases 5G may be on unlicensed or shared spectrum. There's a lot of approaches the government's been taking to doing that. The U.S. has done a great job in the last few years of allocating the high frequency spectrum, the millimeter wave. We were the first place in the world to have a commercial 5G service launched. That was when Verizon turned on their 5G home service in 2018 four cities. I think the first one was Sacramento, and Samsung supplied the network equipment for that. So we were very proud to be part of that launch. And the U.S. has also done a great job in the low frequency, but where we are falling behind the rest of the world is in the mid-band. The U.S. has really not allocated as much. Other parts of the world, like South Korea, have kind of moved ahead in that mid-band spectrum, which is sort of a sweet spot, as I was describing. Interestingly, though, the FCC is just about to hold a vote on a piece of the mid-band spectrum that's called C-band, and people have been eagerly anticipating that FCC decision, which could clear up more than 200 megahertz of spectrum that can be used for 5G. So that will help the U.S. a lot. So I talked about spectrum. The one other thing that I will mention is the deployment of infrastructure. I was describing how some people are worried about big cell towers going up in their neighborhood. That is something that is regulated by city governments. It's not a national government issue. And some cities have really embraced deployment of new networks to allow innovation to happen, brings new innovation, new companies, new jobs. Other cities, there are some cities that have really put roadblocks in the way and charge high fees for carriers to put up their cellular base stations, have zoning review requirements. And so, again, what I would really like to be able to do is make sure those city governments understand that the cutting edge 5G equipment, especially the really fast, millimeter wave equipment, is super small. It's not going to be obtrusive. It's not the kind of thing that people really have to worry about having installed in their backyard.
So, which cities are you getting the most pushback from?
Around the country, I don't have the exact list, but there are some cities that have been fighting with the Federal Communications Commission about an order that the FCC adopted that was really guiding or pushing the cities to streamline their zoning processes. And the FCC kind of took a pretty forceful stance on that. And some cities, I think it's over a dozen scattered around the country, have been suing in court to kind of overturn the FCC's authority in that area. But there are other cities that have not done that and have really raced ahead. I mentioned Sacramento already, worked very collaboratively with carriers to try and make it easy to bring in and locate infrastructure so that those cities can be among the first to get 5G investment. And that's a good proactive and positive approach.
Well, thanks for your perspective here, John. This was really a great capsule summary. I know everybody's saying 5G, what is this that I keep hearing about 5G? So, aside from the capsule summary that Michael Calabrese from New America gave us, on the show, which was, 100 episodes ago. This has been really great, so thank you. Do you have any final ideas you'd like to leave with the audience before we close, and where can we find you online?
Well, you're welcome. Kind of the last thing I hope I'd leave you with is just to make sure people know, what Samsung itself is doing in 5G. We have sold, in December, we announced we'd sold 6.7 million 5G smartphones worldwide, many of them here in the United States. We're supplying 5G base stations and infrastructure equipment for U.S. carriers and operators in other parts of the world. And we announced at the Consumer Electronics Show in January the world's first 5G tablet and the world's first 5G telematics control unit, which goes into a car and connects it wirelessly to the, you know, to the mobile network. And so we are all in on 5G and really racing ahead. For more information on our policy work, you can find me on Twitter at SamsungDC. That's all one word.
John Godfrey, Senior Vice President of Public Policy at Samsung Electronics America.
Joe, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And that concludes episode 219 of the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you like what we do, we'd love to hear from you. Please take a moment to leave a review in Apple Podcasts. Give it a review. It helps others know what they can expect from the show and really helps us out. Also, March 25th, RSVP now at WashingTech.com for our first inaugural conference at NYU's DC campus. We're going to talk about cybersecurity. We'll talk about 5G. We'll talk about any number of topics. You can check out more information again at WashingTech.com, and that's /TechConverge2020. WashingTech.com, TechConverge2020. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you back here next week. Take care.